and I'm an alcoholic. And I'm glad to be here. My sobriety date is November 30th, 1995. I have a sponsor. My sponsor is Janice B. She is also sponsored. My home group is Welcome Home. It is a 5:30 meeting at Chippenham Johnston Willis on Wednesdays in Richmond. So I hope that you'll come and join us there sometime. It's a big book meeting, very small, intimate, quiet meeting. We usually have about 8 people there. So it's a good one for folks who are, you know, kind of shy or what have you. It's a great meeting. I also want to recognize a couple of my friends and sponsees here tonight who joined me. It's just a testament to the fellowship that has been availed to me through the steps of recovery and through sponsorship, that Kathleen and Camilla and Cass have decided to take their time out today to join me in coming out here. And we thought they were going to read the promises or something. but, oh well, so you don't. Just to get centered here, I was born in a family. My mother and father weren't drinking when I was born. I have a brother and sister. My parents were divorced when I was 2. And I went off, my sister and I went off to live with my mother, who we moved to Florida in the 70s, South Florida, Fort Lauderdale, and that's where I was brought up. My mother discovered alcohol around that time, and while I come from an alcoholic home, I don't blame my mother in any way for my disease, for what I have. I experienced a lot of powerlessness over my life and unmanageability before I ever had a drink. And I was really starting drinking around 12. But prior to that, I was getting into all kinds of trouble. My mom was a single parent, and she had a number of jobs. She was also an alcoholic. So my childhood was what at the time I thought I had a lot of freedom. But just some examples of things I was getting into was, and this is my glory list. When I was 9, I got my first tattoo. When I was 10, I got busted for weed in 6th grade. You know, I was getting into all kinds of trouble. And all of this is pre-alcohol. Okay, this is before. And I remember having to, you know, just feeling really irritable, restless, discontent, not knowing where I fit in with people. I was lanky and geeky. I had, like, leg braces at one point and buck teeth, and I just never fit in. And I remember looking outside of myself an awful lot for constant approval and just trying to feel okay with who I was. Therefore, what I ended up doing over that course of time and even much later in my life was to identify with groups of people. The stoners, the rockers, the preppies, the whatever, you put the label on it. And I just try and be what they were. I remember coming home from school and just feeling so panic-ridden and full of anxiety that I didn't know what was going to happen. I had to do little tricks to, like, calm myself down. I would go find a mirror. I had suicidal ideation. I was basically crazy. And then I found alcohol. You know, and I had a lot of access. Like I said, it was the 70s. Right around the time I was 12, my mother remarried, and she married a gentleman who was a daily pot smoker, alcoholic, and drug abuser on the weekends. So I had access. You know, I had long been smoking cigarettes by the age of 7. So I was seasoned. I was able to roll joints and do all that stuff, and alcohol was available to me. There were rules. They were rules such as long as you don't, you know, do this outside of the home and be home by 2 a.m. So those were my rules, and at the time, that seemed reasonable to me. And, you know, that was the first time in my life. It was kind of an important time around 12 because it was we had just been living like gypsies, getting evicted constantly when I was a kid, you know, living off government cheese and Top Ramen. And it was the first time in my life that we had a stable home for me, you know. And stable was, you know, what it was for us, and that was that I had a roof over my head, I had clothes, I was in a school, I wasn't being, you know, yanked in and out of schools. And I really dug into that. I enjoyed it. I got to know people. And that alcohol was a huge part of it, because I gained a lot of acceptance through my peers, because I had the cool house. Everybody could come to my house and drink, and it was fine. It was not going to be a problem. So I did okay. I did very well in that setting for a couple years. And my drinking was episodic, you know, like progression goes. It was fun. It was exciting. It was a relief. You know, I felt like I fit in for the first time. I just had that sense of, you know, everything's going to be okay around that time. And then I started to come into conflict with my parents. There were some issues in the home. I had been sneaking out. There was some loyalty issues, some, you know, there are oftentimes, I'm not the only one, issues where a step-parent and, you know, there's those issues. And that was coming up for us. It was causing problems with my mother and I. So around 14, I decided to leave. And you'll notice I'm saying, I, me, 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 I did this, I did that. That's how I lived my life, you know. I was running my life. And it was just, you know, the environment I was in, on the one hand, these were skills that I needed to develop to a certain extent, because I really did have to take care of myself quite a bit when I was younger. But as I grew up, they just got overblown, you know, and it was very difficult for me to listen to what other people had to say. I moved to California from Florida around that age of 14 to my dad's, who was a social worker, married to a wonderful woman, very normal, wonderful people. You know, she worked with abused children, and he's like this bleeding heart, so they're great. And then my brother and sister were in high school. They were about to get out. And I came there, and they start telling me I need to be home by a certain time, and I have to, like, abide by these rules. And I'm just like, you're kidding. You know, it was very difficult for them. But I acquiesced. I went along with the program for about a year. Before I decided that, you know, it's about time that I move out anyway. I'm like almost 16. my dad had, you know, the sad, and I remember this so clearly, is that when I told my father about this, and I said, you know, look, I've got a job. I go to school half a day in high school. I'm bored out of my school. I'm taking all art classes, because for some reason I had, you know, passed along in school just fine. And I was like, you know, Heidi's moving into her own apartment. Why can't I? So that's what I want to do with my life. And my father looked at me and just started crying. And I was just, what is up? You know, I was really shocked. I never took his feelings into consideration. It just didn't occur to me. You know, my whole idea to move out there was not about being close to my father. It was my next move. You know, it was the next thing I was going to do that was going to serve me. So I, you know, I said, I'm sorry. And he said, well, you know, if you're going to do this, you need to get emancipated. And that's a legal process. So, you know, if you do that, that's what you need to do. And I was like, okay. So I proceeded to do so. And was emancipated and moved out, like, right on my 16th birthday. And, you know, up until 20 years of age, I just remember getting that emancipation. I could drink Mickey's 40 ounces every day. You know, that was my picture of what I was going to do when I grew up, was going to smoke and have my own apartment keys. And that's what I did. I was still in high school. I was working. I was living off like $500 a month. My rent was $280. You know, I drank the rest. And, you know, there was a food bank down the road. And I thought I had arrived. I thought, this is great. You know, here I am living free. And I proceeded to tell myself that this is the way you know, I've made this choice and this is what I want. And from 16 to 20, it was a lot. It was daily drinking. I would take Sundays off. For some reason, Sundays was this one, like, thing. It wasn't because I was religious or anything. It was just because I wanted to try and take a day off. And around 20 years of age, at 20, I got a DUI and was introduced to Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, at that point, up until the DUI, I, to myself, and you'll chuckle, I didn't feel like I had had any consequences of any great, you know, what major consequences have I had? I've had a drunk in public, a minor in possession, but that's not a problem, you know, big deal. And so I was given this, I earned a DUI in South California, and, you know, it wasn't quite my fault. See, I wasn't ready yet, but it wasn't quite my fault. That was the day that they changed the blood alcohol level from 0.1 to 0.8. Or whatever, 0.01 to 0.08 or whatever, the 0.02s. So I went to jail that night, and that was really hard for me. I felt like a bad person. I did. And here I had been telling myself I was a good person all along, you know. And I didn't like that. I didn't like being confronted with my drinking. And my motto, you know, had been work hard, play hard. You know, I was putting myself through school, college. I was working. I paid for everything myself. I'd done a lot by the time I was 20. I'd been in all women's five-piece punk rock band. I'd been the best darn waitress at this Mexican restaurant in Arcata, California. You know, I had done a lot. But when I was, you know, faced with that, oh my gosh, I've gone to jail now. It took me back a bit, and I remember swearing it off. I said, "That's it. I called my mom and dad. My mom being an alcoholic, she said, "Oh, it's okay. Don't worry about it. There's nothing wrong with you." Called my dad. He's like, he's got that sociologist sort of political trends perspective. He's like, yes, you know, they make a lot of money pulling people over. You're okay. You know, they all told me I was okay. And I was like, no, but I'm not okay. Something's wrong here. I'm not going to drink for a month. And then I went 2 weeks. But I remember, you know, when we, in the book, and when we all talk about losing the power of choice or our progression in general, that's like my line. Because I remember that I really gave that my all. I really tried, you know, I really tried not to drink. And I crossed that line. And from there, I just said, that's it. I surrender, you know, to my alcoholism. I would not, you know, admit to my innermost self that I was an alcoholic, not like I did when I finally joined Alcoholics Anonymous. But I said, yes, okay, well, I'm an alcoholic. Now I'm going to drink. You know? So what are you going to say about that? You know? You can't fight that. So I proceeded to drink. And my relationships, you know, I've been to a few meetings here lately that kind of had the same theme going on about relationships and how we affect other people in our drinking. And I've always toed the line because I came to AA 26 and single. You know, I had just burned so many relationships. But I would say, oh no, I didn't hurt people too. I mean, I didn't really do the kind of damage I would have done if I had children and I had a husband and da 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 da. But the longer I'm sober, the more I realize the type of damage I have done. And the people who loved me, who saw that sliver of what was left of truth and, you know, that good spirit that was in me, that hadn't been affected by alcoholism. And just how I could not be available to them. You know, I was just self-centered to the extreme. And I covered it all up with, but I'm a good person. You know, I work at nonprofits. I'm here for the underdog. You know, and that's that. That was my like facade, if you will. So, from 20 to 26, it was just, if you're going to get in the way of my drinking, if you're going to interfere in any way, shape, or form, bye-bye. You know, there's nothing was going to get between me and what I wanted to do, and predominantly that had to do with alcohol. And my drinking increased and got a lot uglier. I was a daily blackout, oblivion drinker. You know, back in the pre-20s when I was doing all the stage diving and tree hugging and all that, that was very social drinking. You know, I was hanging out with hardcore drinkers so that I could drink like they did, but it was very social. And towards, you know, between the 20 and 26, with work aside, I would do most of my drinking in solitary because it was really the safest way to go. So most of my drinking. I still did a lot of drinking out in the public, in the world. The places that I worked in bars. I was a bartender, you know, little waitress. I surrounded myself with people who were going to endorse what I was doing. And okay my behavior. The kind of thinking I had, you know, and a lot of, around the obsession and the compulsion, the denial, I was taking my recycling out in the middle of the night and spreading it amongst the neighbors, you know, recycling in the apartment building. I was waking up every day and saying, I'm not going to do it. I'm not going to drink today. Now, I could never say I'm not going to drink again, because that would be lying, and I'm, you know, so a little more denial there. But I would find myself around 4 or 5 o'clock, you know, at the liquor store, and I was, red wine was my preference toward the end, but I definitely went through Old Bushmills Over and all that other, you know, martinis and stuff like that. I think that the red wine was just more convenient because I could get 2 bottles and that would do it. I'll just get sober for, let's just do that. So when I was 26, I, you know, this whole time up until then, I had been thinking, well, I know I've been to AA because when I got the DUI, they made me go to alcohol school. And I did. Saturday morning. And learning about alcoholism in school. And then I went to AA meetings. And I remember from the AA meetings and from my aunt, I come from a long line of alcoholics. My auntie was really bad. She was bad, bad drunk. And she had gotten sober. Matter of fact, she's like 30 years sober today. And I knew that AA worked for people. So throughout various, you know, incomprehensible demoralization periods, I would remember Alcoholics Anonymous, and I would remember that it did work for some people, but I just wasn't ready, and I knew that. So when I was 26, and I had, you know, it was no special evening. I think it was like a Thursday night, which was my favorite night to drink, and every night was. And I had my 2 bottles of wine, and I thought I was only going to drink one, but I needed to get 2 just in case I needed that extra, you know, and then they're both gone. And I came to that morning, and I went into the bathroom, and I was living alone in this apartment, and I looked into the mirror, and it was really one of the first times in my conscious life that I looked into the mirror, and I looked into my own eyes. And, you know, I realized I never really could do that. It's like I could look at the outer shell and I could make sure that the shoes match the whatever. But I couldn't look at myself, really look at myself. And that morning I did. And I felt death. You know, I felt a complete emptiness within me. I felt like I'd never felt before, like it was the end. And that I needed help. And that the next thought was Alcoholics Anonymous. And, you know, go get the phone book. So I'm like, okay, I don't know who's telling me to do this. So I go and get the phone book, and I call, and I find out there's a meeting that day. And I went for a run that day. I remember it was a November, so it was fally, and it was wet in Seattle. And I went for a run that day. I hadn't run in a very long time. And then I went to a meeting that day and proceeded to go to a meeting every day for at least a year, daily. And God plopped me into this, the gay part of Seattle. I was placed in a safe area because my drinking, when I was drinking, it was not safe. and I've wondered about that, you know, like I've heard horror stories, I've lived them, and not that I need to analyze it, but I almost wonder if, you know, I had to tell myself I had to become the perpetrator, you know, and I had to become the one that was going to get you before you get me. And just conquest on people. And that's what I did when I was drinking. And so for me, being freshly sober, it was very important that I be in an environment that was going to be safe for me, because I didn't know how to act yet. And so I went to a women's meeting, and I think it was the first meeting, but it might have been the second, and I got a sponsor. It was like, that's what they said to do, and I did it, and it was unreal. I mean, if you would tell me you like my hair long, I'm going to cut it short, you know, I'm going to be contrary, I'm going to do whatever you say, I'm going to do the opposite. And for me, I mean, that in itself is a miracle, that I just was going to follow directions for the first time. And I just had my butt kicked by alcoholism. I was spiritually bankrupt, you know. I was at the end of my rope, and AA was there, and a sponsor and I connected, and I proceeded to go through the steps with her. I went to meetings every day, and I was on a pink cloud. I was relieved, you know, all that anxiety and that panic that I had before I ever drank, you know. I had that while I was drinking too, you know. Alcohol only worked for a little while, and then I was still suffering from that anxiety during my life. And I just felt like I had been completely carried that whole year. And worked the steps, like I said, went through all kinds of changes with, you know, work and what have you. But, you know, I started to have fun. I started to have fun in a way that was healthy and good for me, you know, to be around other women, going out, you know, playing pool, doing stuff, having fun. And, you know, that group really insulated me there and helped me along. And I remember my sponsor, the things that it was so important to me when I was newly sober. The word integrity. That, I mean, I could cry right now because it was something I had been lacking for so long, and I wanted it, you know. And when we locked in on that word as we were reading through the steps, I was just like, oh, yeah, that's what I want. That's what I want. You know, if I want anything, I want it sober, and I want to experience integrity. And she showed me how to do that by taking action. And she also told me things like, don't give up 5 minutes before the miracle. Because even though I was on this pink cloud and everything was hunky-dory, I was still crazy. So, you know, I would get wrapped up in my mind about whatever things they were, you know, little things. And she would say, 5 minutes, you know, don't give up. And she was always right, if I could just hang in there, you know. So that was Heather, and she was my sponsor, you know. But when I got up to about a year sober, I decided, you know, there were some things that just hadn't been done yet, you know, that I needed to do. So my clock was ticking, and you know, I had always wanted to be a mommy. You know, I just, that was something I had always felt. As a little girl, I would always play with dolls. And just, I would earn money, you know, washing neighbors' cars, and I would go to Kmart and buy baby clothes. and create a hope chest for my children. When, you know, this is like at 6 and 7, 8 years old. Those are the things I was doing. So it was something that I really wanted. It was also something that I had forfeited as an alcoholic. I had the opportunity to have children, and I gave that up. And I remember having to make that choice. And it was, I was not going to be, my drinking couldn't be interfered with, no matter how badly I wanted to have children. That just couldn't happen. So that's what started, you know, we get our feelings back. I was getting those feelings back and that desire and to have a child. And, you know, of course, at the time, I'm like, oh, and this is wonderful, and look, here he is, and this poor man. And so, you know, I could say, with all of that, I would say, isn't this all wonderful? This is all meant to be. And think to my, and think that I wasn't running the show, but in fact, I mean, it wasn't until it was all, I had just ruined a lot of stuff, that I look back and do a 4-step, and I say, oh my gosh, look what I did, you know? But that's what happened. I ended up getting into a relationship, and of course, that kind of gets in the way of your, you know, you can't really go to meetings every night when you're in a relationship. And I had selected someone who had high needs, you know, and it was a transfer of addiction for me. It was a new high maintenance, you know, my alcoholism was very high maintenance still, and I was very good at that, and I was going to do this, and didn't know it at the time, but I proceeded with this, and we got pregnant soon, and got married in Las Vegas at the Little White Chapel, and we were divorced 1 year and 5 days later. But the nice thing about it is that I had people from AA, from my litter mates, people that I had gotten sober with, who stayed in touch with me. And my sponsor was just kind of like, I'm here, you've been through the steps, you need to sponsor other women, and you need to go to meetings. And she kind of left it open-ended like that, so I just took as far as she was giving me. You know, she was insane, I'm not going to be your sponsor anymore. So I just kind of kept pulling the rope out, see how much slack she'd give me. And I nearly hung myself with that because I got myself into a very abusive, physically and mentally, relationship with someone, this man, and I got into a lot of trouble. But by the grace of God, I started to feel, I had the child, and the child was special needs. He was born with a cleft palate and swallowing difficulty. And I knew that I couldn't handle that. Now, I thought I could manage this relationship, but I couldn't handle that. So I needed help again. So I went back to AA. I didn't drink, but, you know, I was dry. Went back to AA. I had those people calling on me saying, where are you? What are you doing? Can I come and help you with the baby? Can we, you know, and they surrounded me. And they just, you know, AA sucked me right out of that negative situation that existed. And God had a lot to do with that, too. And I was part of the solution group in Ballard, which is a sub-community of Seattle, Washington. It's a great meeting. If you guys ever go there, it's like 200 people, and it's great big book stuff. So I got rejoined with Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm getting a divorce. We're going through criminal court as well as, you know, the custodial stuff. And I have a new sponsor from the Solution Group who says that, you know, we're going to go through the big book. And this is how it's done. And she's very, and I'm like, yeah, take me, I'm yours, you know. And it was like miracle grow on my program. I was definitely facing some difficult life circumstances. I was, as a caregiver, as a mother, and just where I was at, you know, I didn't have a stable job. It was all just kind of woo. but AA was solid in there. And this woman who sponsored me, Carolyn, had a knee surgery, knee problem. And to my luck, she was available to me. She was on, like, disability for a little while to recover from her leg, and she was like, and I wasn't working, I was working from home. She was like, how about I come over every day? And I'm like, yeah, you know, let's do it. And I was eager. I was like, you tell me what to do, I'm going to do it, you know. I'm just not going to balk. And I followed her directions, and I had a spiritual experience. And I had a spiritual experience the first time, and that time, and many times since, through, you know, working the steps. But that was quite the lift of the veil with her, because I had covered the basic, you know, first level of my denial, and there was this whole other, you know, thing going on that I just had never connected with until then. So this other really neat thing happened to me. I with the relationships, you know, I had always been kind of involved in something, even if it wasn't named something, I was doing that. You know, and during this time, I had a very close friend in who had moved to New Mexico, and she had a history with drugs and was clean and had been clean for a long time. And I was on the phone with her, and I was just saying, oh my gosh, I can't believe what's going on here. You know, this is really hard, but I feel so free right now. I feel renewed. It's just something, I don't know what's going on. This is hard. And she said, you know, you just need to not be in a relationship for 2 years, or for a year, she says. And I go, what? No, because I used to get a lot of power out of that. You know, I didn't realize it then, but and I said, yeah, you're crazy. Yeah, whatever. And lo and behold, I was 2 years celibate. Like, 2 years later, I was celibate for that long a time. It was crazy. God just struck me celibate. But it's what I needed. You know, I had this little baby I had to take care of, and he's fine, by the way. And it just gave me time to get to know who the heck I was, you know? I mean, to really finally understand who I am and what my purpose is here, and to be of service in Alcoholics Anonymous, and to grow up. So I started growing up, and I was sticking with the winners. You know, I was doing my meetings, I was following directions, and I was hanging with those people that had stuck it out with me from the beginning and making new friends. And I had moved to north of Seattle to sort of, my job, everything started to take care of itself. You know, it's like this little nonprofit that I started just got taken care of. It just happened. And it just very little effort in all areas of my life, because AA was the center of my life. And that's what I was, you know, that and being a mom, taking care of my son. So we got some stability, and I was able to buy a little condo north of Seattle. And I was double-guessing myself after I moved out there, because it was like there were no sidewalks, and I was really a city girl. I was used to just walking out the door, going to the grocery store, that kind of thing. I loved to walk. And I got out there, and I was like, oh, no, you know, I bought a little condo out here in the suburbs with strip malls and no sidewalks, and what have I done? And where's the AA here? And, you know, went straight to AA, found AA, found AA with childcare, found caregivers when I couldn't bring my son to meetings, and just got connected there. And then I remember, like, the same day that I found this really killer meeting, I was at the grocery store, and I said, do you guys have, you know, because it's kind of the country, do you have trails or places where people can walk? Because I don't want to get hit by a car, you know. And she says, yeah, right there, you know. And so she just points right down the road, and it's, you know, 0.5 miles from my house on the coast. And it's this beautiful 1.5 mile hike down to the beach under the railroad tracks, and, you know, the Puget Sound and the mountains. And it's just like, I walked down there and I got on my knees and I just cried. I was like, oh my gosh, who'd have thought it? You know, I was ready to, like, cancel the, you know, the mortgage or whatever, thinking I'd made a huge mistake. And here I was just on to that next dimension. I was just growing. I was going somewhere new. and everything was going to be okay. And I got a service commitment at that killer meeting and made some great friends there and continued on. I met my husband in AA, and we had been home group members, associates, you know, not anything going on for a good year before we ever, like, took a date or anything like that. And you know what they say in AA? The odds are good that you might find a mate, but the goods are odd. So I like that one. we both say that when we talk. But no, it was fantastic, and you know, though our relationship is so special, obviously to me and to him, that because we asked God into the center of it and we put AA first, and I feel so blessed. My husband is Michael W., and he's just, you know, we have different programs. They don't, different types of approaches, and but all the important things, the principles and the important things, the service work and being in all parts of Alcoholics Anonymous are in place. And, yeah, I am just blessed with a beautiful family. We ended up, my husband and I, my now and forever husband, have two children together. So I'm a mother of three, a 9, a 5, and a 2-year-old. And it's an absolute blessing, you know. And I went through a lot of pain with my relationship with my mother. You know, I didn't know until I got sober that my mom was even an alcoholic. And all I can remember is just, as a child, always just wanting her. Just feeling desperate for her attention. And that didn't change a whole lot. After I got sober, I was plagued with that desire of just unmet need. Wah, you know? And what has happened for me is that I'm able to see her, you know, I've processed through a lot of that, certainly the anger, you know, and what AA is teaching me is to continue to forgive. And just, you know, I'm beyond the age that I can be mothered at this point, you know. I'm certainly nurtured in Alcoholics Anonymous and with our friendships and our sponsorship family. We have a very tight and strong sponsorship family that supports each other. But what I can do is continue to pray for her and forgive her and just love her where she's at. And you know, God has given me the opportunity to be a sober mom. My license plate says sober mom, and I live in Richmond. I scare them. That's okay. I'm still a little edgy, you know. But that's so rewarding because, you know, I have this 9-year-old, and I'm thinking, he can't even make macaroni and cheese, you know. And I was, you know, the comparison is just so incredible. So I'm so glad he can't make macaroni and cheese. But he doesn't have to have that skill set right now, you know. My relationship with God has, you know, I always had that sense. I had dabbled in agnostics, but I had that sense. I always have known that there was something greater than me. I just had made that choice to be the one running my life, or the illusion of running my life. And I am loving the relationship I have with God today. And anybody would ask me 5 years ago, I would have said the same thing. But it just keeps growing. And, you know, again, through the steps, you know, I work the 10th step on a daily basis, 11 and 12 daily, I would say I do that. And what that gives me is a closer relationship with God. And I am, like, so far from perfect, but it's okay. I'm able now to be open to new experiences, to be less judgmental than I used to be, to be teachable. And usually that follows, you know, after being really obstinate for a while on certain issues. But in looking at them, they're typically small issues. It's the little stuff that gets me. It's that guy in the grocery line, I was telling Kathleen about this, who comments on my Perrier and Cantis that pisses me off, you know. It's that kind of stuff now. I'm able to just let go because I'm not that important, you know. And it's just a free and wonderful way to live. I hope it's not too early to close, but I really feel done. Thanks.